Welcome to a special episode of PageCast, recorded at the Open Book Festival, Cape Town's annual literary gathering, spotlighting South African writing within a global conversation. Enjoy.
Hello, my name is Bongani Pona.
And I'm Frankie Murray.
And I'm delighted to be chatting to Frankie about our most recent collection of short stories, A Collection of Gaps. And we've known each other for some time.
A long time.
And we were in conversation as well earlier today as part of the Open Book Festival. But one thing I realized is, because I went back home and I've come back, one thing I realized, I had a memory that's this, sorry for the long-winded question, into the opening. So many years ago, I was interviewing a rock band. Rock band is a very loose term.
Yeah.
Their debut album was called After Robots.
Okay.
And I went up there. My first question was, what does this mean? Is this like post-humanism? Is this? I went on and on, and these guys looked at me like something that had come from a different planet. He said, look, man, one the guitarist said, look, man, like when you're in a taxi and you say, I want to be dropped off
after the robot.
That's what the title kind of means. So it just, this is a long way of saying sometimes the most simplest questions, like there's nothing wrong with the most simplest questions. We've known each other for a long time, but I thought I'd ask you about where you grew up.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's actually it's a bit of a complicated question. Mm. I was born in Canada, and then we came back to South Africa briefly. And then we went to Botswana, and then we went to Malawi, and then we came back to South Africa. And then I stayed in KwaZulu-Natal for all of primary school in Vryheid, this weird little Afrikaans town in the northern part. And then we moved through to Pietermaritzburg for high school. And that was the growing up part. So it was like a bit all over the place. I went to a convent. And then I went to an Anglican girls' school. So school was not my happy place, but it did give me a very different experience of growing up in apartheid South Africa, you know, where you're kind of, on the one hand, privileged to be surrounded by a diverse population, but it's such a bubble. And even within that bubble, there were still those kind of friend groups along racial lines, let's put it that way.
If you don't mind me asking, why such an itinerant childhood?
My dad was, or is actually, yes, to be fair, is a civil engineer. And he was studying at the University of Toronto. And then when he returned to South Africa, I think that he had to, it was a kind of bursary thing that when you're like finished, you have to go and work for a particular company. So he went to go and work for them, and then that moved him to different places, and then ended up back in Vryheid for a while. And well, as I say, quite a long time. He stopped working for a company at that point and made his own, because he doesn't work well under others.
So the reason for our conversation today is this beautiful collection, which I hope we can unbox
that would be amazing.
As we talk, but the main kind of preoccupation with this body of work is ideas of home. And I was just quite curious how that preoccupation comes about.
Yeah, I mean, your question makes complete sense considering the subject matter. I think that it's like I think many people who write, or maybe it's many people who create, whether that writing or the creations are published in the public domain, you're still often understanding, you're battling to fit. There's an outsider-ness. And I think that when you've got that as kind of part of your formative identity, really, it's tricky not to think about home on and off again, like throughout your life. But I think that in the last few years, as the world has become a harder place for me to certainly find comfort in, I have thought more and more about what home actually means and how tenuous it can be and how small you sometimes have to make it and what traveling means in terms of home. What do you actually have to take with you for a place to feel like home? All of these different things like were really preoccupying my mind in a very big way. But I think that, like, you know, when I talk about the last few years, I'm also thinking very seriously about the violence of the last few years, not just in South Africa, but globally, and how people's homes have just been devastated.
No, absolutely. I wonder if we can sort of continue our conversation. I can't unbox this. So we just want to tell us, just show, yeah, just how the book is packaged.
Yeah. Okay. So it's a box with a sliding lid, which I do really enjoy. Yes, the sliding lid. And then there are a number of stories. And this is kind of the title sample pamphlet thing, which gives the order that I kind of put them together. But the nature of having all of these different pamphlets means that you can read in any order. So there, I think that there are 20 of them.
Yeah.
A lot of them, many. And then there is an artwork that I made while I was creating this thing that was kind of also part of the project. And I was lucky enough to have Karina as my publisher. And so she allowed me to get this printed and turned into a kind of fold out, which includes some thoughts. And it's kind of a weird map of the process. And then there's stuff that I found on the street. So Bongani's got a piece of this, I can't even remember the word for this now. It's gone straight out of my head.
Sort of
measuring tape. Yes.
Yeah.
So it's a piece that I found. And then I think the last thing that's in there is two sticker sheets. So yeah, it speaks to a process that I went through, and you know, hopefully, I see you've also got you got lucky. You've got a button and two shells. yes.
I'll talk to you about this in a moment, but talk to me about the thought process behind this, like, which is, it's like, yeah, I feel so lucky to have this. Just talk to me about, like, did you imagine it as something like this?
So I think that when I started thinking about it, when I started writing it, a lot of the stuff that I was thinking, it wasn't necessarily, okay, these are the words. It was like, okay, this is a piece of music that I can hear, or this is like the drawing that I feel is part of it, or you know, this is the smell that I like. It was a very all encompassing sensorial experience to try and put this thing together, and to try and reduce it to just being words on a page felt like such a disservice, and that it wouldn't be the dream that I was dreaming. You know, for this, like for Karina to have said yes to this, it's allowed me to take that kind of dream and put it into a reality. It's not an exact match, but it's pretty close. You know, it's like the bits and pieces that are in the box. Those are things that I've picked up over years in the different streets that I've walked down, on the beaches that I've been to, on the mountain, like wherever I've been, I pick things up. And at the end of each day, I empty out my pockets. And so my house got like full of stuff. And so I put it all in, well, not all of it, but a lot of it, I've now like put into these different boxes. And the idea of like it being a box, it to me, it means that a box is for storing things. So the moment you've got a box, you put something in it. So I'm hoping that the people who buy the box would add to it. And in a way that feeds into the theme that they're creating this kind of home space for themselves. They're storing the thing that means something to them in the box. And if the things that I've put in there aren't resonating with them, aren't important to them, they can toss them. They can keep one part of it or all of it, or, you know, whatever makes the most sense. It's a thing that's, because it's all loose, it's not just one thing. It's likely that stuff will go missing.
Yeah.
As stuff comes in to replace it, which I think is something that probably makes a lot of people feel quite anxious. Because, I mean, like with the stickers, a lot of people are like, when I've said, have you put your stickers anywhere? It's like, no, I've got to have the complete set.
Sure.
You know, that people have got this idea of like a complete set of something. And I think for a lot of people, the box is going to be like, but what happens if a part goes missing? but that's kind of the point.
Thank you so much. I was horrified as you opening the box because I've got my own sort of like notepads of stuff. At least I've started.
I didn't look at it, I promise.
I'm going to ask you about this map in a second, but I want to ask you to read. And then I just wanted to say something, which is, I forget who said it. Somebody had said that about writing, being a love letter that nobody has asked you for, just a love letter that nobody has.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. And for me, this felt like such a gift. So, and so thank you so much for that. But please, do you mind reading for us?
Not at all. This is a piece called Home Truths. Home Truths. Where have you been? The same question echoes through time. Him, her father, her mother, voices layered. And she knows there is no right answer. Work went on longer than usual. She can't say, never could say, looking, or by myself, or watching, or giving myself very deliberately to someone whose name is so unimportant I have already forgotten it. The right answer is never the truth. All these lies, why do you lie? Tell me the truth. Stop speaking. She's home, but still. The same person asks the same questions, and she was told when she was small and didn't know how to question or keep her mouth shut, tell the truth. Now see, her truth has no home. Her truth hurts to move and is rattling against her teeth, looking to escape. See what you made me do? This is a lie. This is the truth. Look at the water washing the edge to mud. Oh, wait, that's blood, her blood. And now she's a woman whose truth is smothered by statistics. That is the truth we should look at. All the women in your life, dead. Take the bones, bury them with tears and ritual. The truth of the dead woman. I am constantly trying to find ways to not meet the eyes of everything in this world which is supposed to be my home. In my dream, a domestic scene, I'm cutting a tomato. The knife slips and I cut my finger. The dripping blood turns into words and the words fall to the ground, nestling themselves into a footnote. The dream slides disturbingly and I realize the cut is far deeper than I thought. The words come up to my ankles and they are not making sense. By the time they reach my knees, words no longer exist and it's letters only, eating away my small dream home. I wake, clutching at my throat, drowning in the sharp edges. I realized at some point that I wasn't looking for a home. I was looking for a place to hide. And then I started looking carefully. What could it mean? A study of embedded homes, snails, hermit crabs, gypsies, or possibly creating a terrarium of sorts and staying in a car. With death, I breathe out everything I know. Silence will not protect you. I give my memories to those still alive. I am done keeping secrets and burying dead things. And it no longer matters where I am from. Now we shall find where we are going.
Thank you so much.
Such an uplifting piece.
No, do you want to speak about it? Because you've got this line here on this artwork as well. I realize silence protects nothing. I know we're talking about, or you were talking rather about homes being destroyed, the violence that we've seen over the last few years. But also, and I was saying to you earlier in the morning that in reading this collection of stories, just in the subterranean depths of it, there's the question of violence.
Yeah.
Violence done to the body. And so, and I wonder if people just chat a little bit about that.
I think that the world that we find ourselves in is one that's, violence has almost become everyday. I don't know how you feel, but I feel like in many instances it's almost casual. And I mean, I'm not talking about like physical violence here necessarily, but like the kind of the words that slice, the words that like keep on echoing around in your head. And sometimes it's not from close family or your friends or anything like that. It can be something that you've heard on the street, and you just think, the casual way in which we just, it's fine, it's okay, it's accepted. But yeah, I think that within the home space, there is a lot that you end up having to recover from. And then I just think about like the wars that we are kind of consuming on social media with horror. And I know for myself, feeling this sense of like, how do I survive what do I do? How do I comprehend? Like, I struggle to understand how any of us can. Yes, I don't know if that answers your question.
It does, but I actually wanted to follow up with another question, which is, what does writing do in a world filled with such violence? What is the play? I know it's a large question.
Yeah, but I mean, it's one that I think about fairly regularly, because I think the work that I do with Open Book, it's a question that I ask myself: what is the value of Open Book? That's a gathering of writers who have spent time putting words to things. And I think that what it does is it helps us, like, to come together as a community and at least breathe together. You know, just give each other a moment where, yes, everything is hard, but I'm here to hug you kind of thing. There's also that thing where someone will have written something that allows you to think about it in a more coherent way, instead of it being like a bunch of moss or like wasps in your head, like, you know, that, like, you know, like if someone gives you the language, it helps you to think more clearly, or certainly it helps me to think more clearly. And so I feel like any writing that has been done, it allows that kind of thing. But also, I think, like, I've been reading for as long as I can remember. And I certainly think that the act of reading means that you've got to understand someone else's story, someone else's point of view. And that the next step to that is just, like, it's empathy. It's like, I want to figure out, like, what can we learn from each other? How can I support you? How can you support me? It becomes there's an opportunity for friendship. There's an opportunity for joy with completely diverse people, instead of, like, I can only be with what I understand and know and myself. Mm-hmm. And that's writing. It's stories. Surely.
No, absolutely. I've a long way around to sort of like the next question. And thank you so much for that response. I remember when I was growing up, and I'm aging myself, at the turn of the millennium, there was a Time magazine issue, which was like sort of like the 100 people of the century. And I remember quite distinctly, because I was still quite a kid, it had like I think it had 6 different covers. But among the people who was like the 100, top 100, whatever of the century, these are crazy lists anyway, just to say that. There was the guy who had invented television, but he's not the person that profited from television.
Mm.
And they didn't have a picture of him. So it was somebody with his sitting, looking at like 500 screens. And the caption was, he wasn't happy with what he saw even before like 500 screens. And there's a sad story to this, because the guy eventually takes his own life. But I remember I'm not even a teenager yet, but I remember sort of understanding that's what loneliness is. And I never understood it there, but somehow, like, just seeing that little caption, seeing that picture, like, seeing that screens. But, like, I guess I'm saying this story to echo what you're saying, that sometimes writing does give us language for sometimes what's going on internally or sometimes what's going on externally. And I want to ask you a bit about, so in both this is the first collection, which is amazing, Everyone Dies. both your first collection and the second collection, a lot of characters are not named. And I want you to, can I invite you to speak about that?
Yeah, so I think that to me, like, the people that are in the stories, they don't have names. They're for the reader to associate themselves with or not. It's a person who you could recognize or parts of it, but they're not character driven in a way. I don't know if that makes sense to you. It's like that's not part of the story for me. I'm like, you know, a lot of the stuff that I read, I like a good plot. I know that, but apparently when I write, it's not plot driven, and the characters don't survive very long for the most part. I can't really say more than that.
Absolutely no worries at all. I'm aware that we are running out of time.
Okay.
And And you are a very busy person. I left here at 10 o'clock, I think, or just about 9:30, you were still here.
Yeah.
I got here very early and so you've had quite a long day. So yeah. I want to leave firstly to say thank you for the work that you do with Open Book and as the project coordinator, and thank you for all your amazing writing. And so my last question would be, what do you want readers to walk away with from A Collection of Gaps? And also, what do you want people to walk away from Open Book?
I think that with A Collection of Gaps, I hope that people enjoy the experience as much as I enjoyed putting it together. You know, I hope that they add to it. I hope that they interact with it. I hope that it gives them a little bit of joy, even though some of the content is quite dark. You know, like to me, it is a project of joy somehow. And I think, you know, in terms of Open Book, I hope that people walk away having felt that the gathering of the 3 days has given them a chance to be themselves and has given them a chance to find new friends, new family, and that it's made them feel like, even for a brief moment, that everything will be all right.
I think that's a good place to leave things. Thank you again, Frankie.
Thank you.